Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for words and their stories and people in America, coming up after As It Is.
Hello again, and welcome to As It Is. I'm Mario Ritter in Washington. Today, we have a program of extremes. Later in the show, we hear about the world of the very small, the world of ants. Learn secrets of how these highly organized insects choose their leaders. But first, we remember how the United States Space Agency reached a very big goal. On July 20, 1969, American astronauts sped beyond our own world and touched the face of another for the first time. Jonathan Evans tells us more about the moon landing and why America went to the moon.
45 years ago, humans visited another world for the first time. Two American astronauts stepped out of their spacecraft and onto the moon. This happened during a fierce competition in space technology between the U.S. and the former Soviet Union. The time period is known as the Space Race. The space race began in the 1950s, during the period of political and military tension called the Cold War between the U.S. and the Soviet Union. Alexander Lavakin is the deputy director of the Memorial Museum of Cosmonauts. He is also a former cosmonaut, the Russian term for space explorer. He says the space race was as much about politics as it was about science.
There was a big competition between us and America. Who will launch the first space satellite? It turned out we were the first ones.
The Soviet Union launched the first man-made satellite, Sputnik, in 1957. It was a 58-centimeter metal ball with four wire transmitters. The satellite circled the Earth and transmitted a simple signal. The American public did not like hearing about the Russians' success. In 1958, the U.S. launched its first satellite called Explorer 1. But the Soviets again moved ahead in the space race. In 1961, Yuri Gagarin became the first person to orbit the Earth. He returned to the Soviet Union as a hero. 1 month after Mr. Gagarin, Alan Shepard became the first American astronaut in space. Kathleen Lewis is a museum official at the National Air and Space Museum in Washington, D.C. She says then-President John Kennedy wanted the U.S. to set higher goals than the Soviets. He wanted the U.S. to land on the moon.
On the United States side, I think there's a bit of hubris that we can do anything better.
On July 20th, 1969, American Neil Armstrong became the first person to walk on the moon. The space race slowed and moved toward cooperation in the 1970s. The United States and the Soviet Union conducted their first joint space mission in 1975. Doug Millard works at London's Science Museum. He says building the International Space Station and the decline of communism in the Soviet Union helped end the Cold War. Currently, the American and Russian space agencies do not have plans for increased cooperation. But their competitive space race is now a thing of the past. I'm Jonathan Evans.
Most people know that ants form highly organized societies. Bob Doty tells us the secrets of how these industrious insects work together and choose their leader.
Scientists have always been interested in the high level of organization in ant societies. American researchers have watched ants build life-saving rafts to keep afloat during floods. They also have documented how ant colonies choose their next queen, the female whose job is to produce eggs. New technology is helping to improve researchers' understanding of the insects, but there is still a lot to be learned. Fire ants living in Brazilian forests are perfectly at home in an environment where flooding is common. To save themselves, the insects connect their legs together and create floating rafts. Some ant rafts can be up to 20 centimeters wide. David Hu is a mechanical engineer with the Georgia Institute of Technology, also known as Georgia Tech. He says ants know how to join together tightly.
You can imagine you have 100 ants, which means 600 legs. 99% of those legs will be connected to a neighbor. So they're very, very good at maintaining this network.
David Hu and other Georgia Tech researchers wanted to study ants and the secret of their engineering. They froze ant rafts and looked at them with the help of computer technology, or CT images. The pictures showed that larger ants serve in central positions to which smaller ants hold. The larger ants form pockets of air that keep the insects afloat. Scientists say small robots or materials that can change shape could be programmed in a similar way, working towards a shared goal. Researchers at North Carolina State University are also studying ants. They examined how Indian jumping ants choose the leader of the colony when they lose their top female or queen. Researcher Clint Pennock says all the worker ants in the colony are females. His team found that the work ants start a series of competitions, or battles. The team found that some workers become physically larger, and that led to the release of chemicals in the insects.
Within a matter of days, we see changes in dopamine in the brain that we think are linked to the reproduction that starts in these workers.
Soon, the winning ant starts developing ovaries, the organs required to produce eggs, while its brain decreases in size. The winning ant also begins standing taller and generally lives three times as long as the other ants. I'm Bob Doty.
And I'm Mario Ritter in Washington. Thank you for joining us for this edition of As It Is. Please remember to write to us and tell us how you hear our programs. Tell us about the kinds of things you find interesting.
Words and Their Stories is next, followed by People in America. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
I'm Barbara Klein.
And I'm Steve Ember with People in America in VOA Special English. Today we tell about the life of tennis champion Arthur Ashe. He was an athlete and a social activist who died before he was 50. He was honored for his bravery and honesty, as well as his strong support of just causes.
In 1975, Arthur Ashe played against Ilya Nastase in the Masters Tennis Games in Stockholm, Sweden. Nastase was out of control. He delayed the game. He called Ashe bad names. Finally, Arthur Ashe put down his tennis racket and walked off the tennis court. He said, "I've had enough. I'm at the point where I'm afraid I'll lose control." The officials were shocked. Ashe was winning the game. One official told him he would lose if he walked out of the game. Ashe said, "I don't care. I'd rather lose that than my self-respect." The next day, the Masters Committee met. They knew that if they gave the game to Nastase, they would be supporting his kind of actions. They felt it was how you played the game that really counted, so the officials decided it was Nastase who must lose the game.
Arthur Ashe was born in 1943 in the southern city of Richmond, Virginia. His parents were Matty Cunningham Ashe and Arthur Ashe Sr. In those days, black people and white people lived separately in the South. By law, African Americans could not attend the same schools or the same churches as white people. Arthur learned to live with racial separation. He attended an all-black school. He played in the areas kept separate for blacks. And when he traveled to his grandmother's house, he sat in the back of the bus behind a white line. Only white people could sit in the front part of the bus. Tennis was a sport traditionally played by white people. Arthur's experience was different from most other tennis players. He grew up under poorer conditions. His father worked several jobs at the same time, and his mother died when he was 6.
Mr. Ashe taught his son the importance of leading an honorable life. He said a person does not get anywhere in life by making enemies. He explained that a person gains by helping others. Arthur Ashe Sr. taught his son the importance of his friends, his family, and his history. He said that without his good name, he would be nothing. By example, Arthur's father taught the importance of hard work. His job was to drive people where they wanted to go. And he did other kinds of jobs for several wealthy families.
When Arthur was 4, his father was given responsibility for a public play area called Brook Field. It was the largest play area for black people in the city of Richmond. Mr. Ashe continued to work at his other jobs as well. The family moved into a 5-room house in the middle of the park. Arthur could use the swimming pool, basketball courts, baseball fields, and tennis courts in the park. He liked sports. He was not very big, but he was fast.
Arthur began playing tennis when he was 7 years old. He was very small. The racket he used to hit the tennis ball seemed bigger than he was. But by the time he was 13 years old, he was winning against players 2 times his size and age. Arthur had great energy and sense of purpose. He would hit 500 tennis balls each summer day early in the morning. He would stop to eat his morning meal. Then he would hit 500 more tennis balls.
When Arthur was 10 years old, he met Robert Walter Johnson. Dr. Johnson established a tennis camp for black children who were not permitted to play on tennis courts for whites. Dr. Johnson helped Arthur learn to be calm while playing tennis. He taught him to use restraint. He said that anger at an opponent was a waste of energy. By 1960, Arthur had won the National Junior Indoor Championship, and the University of California at Los Angeles offered him a college education if he played for the UCLA tennis team. In 1965, Arthur Ashe led the team to the National Collegiate Athletic Association Championship. He completed his education the next year with a degree in business administration.
Arthur Ashe then became a professional tennis player. In 1968, he won the United States Open. It was the first time an African-American man had won one of the 4 major competitions in tennis. In 1970, he won the Australian Open. The next year, he won the French Open Doubles Championship with Marty Reeson. And in 1975, he won the Wimbledon Singles Championship in England. 2 times, he was named the #1 tennis player in the world.
Throughout his life, Arthur Ashe fought against social injustice. He supported racial equality and tried to bring blacks and whites together. In 1973, Ashe was the first black player to be invited to compete in the South African Open. At the time, South African laws separated people by race. Ashe knew why he was invited. He knew that the South African government was trying to change its image so it could take part in the Olympic Games. He agreed to go, but on his own terms. He played before a racially mixed group, and he went wherever he pleased and said what he wanted.
Arthur Ashe went back to South Africa many times. He went not only to fight against the system of racial separation, he went to show the oppressed children of the country that he was a successful black man. Former South African President Nelson Mandela spent 27 years in prison. After his release, the first person Mandela asked to see during his visit to the United States was Arthur Ashe.
Ashe used his fame to help increase public knowledge of racism in America. He told reporters how the color of his skin kept him out of tennis games as a boy in Richmond. He spoke against black separatism. He wanted to unite the races, not separate them. During his travels with the United States Davis Cup team, he said, "People in other countries read a lot about race troubles in the United States, but when they see two guys from the South, like Cliff Ritchie and me, one white and one colored, both sharing a room and being close friends, it must do a little good.
In 1977, Arthur Ashe married Jean Motusami. They shared a deep concern for others. Ashe always urged people to do their best, even his opponents. To help others, he started an organization, the Safe Passage Foundation. It helped poor children develop the skills to learn, and it taught them how to play tennis and golf.
In 1979, Ashe felt severe pain in his chest. He had suffered his first heart attack, even though he seemed in excellent physical condition. His days of playing tennis were over. Doctors operated on him later that year to try to improve the flow of blood from his heart, but his physical activity was very limited. 4 years later, he had to have another operation.
Now that he could not be active in sports, he took on new responsibilities. He helped the American Heart Association educate the public about heart disease. He wrote books, and in 1986, he became a father when his wife Jean gave birth to their daughter, Camera. 2 years later, Arthur Ashe faced his final struggle. He discovered he had the virus that causes the disease AIDS. He and his doctors believed he had gotten it when he received infected blood after his second heart operation. He kept the bad news a secret for more than 3 years. He did not want his daughter to know. But reporters found out about his condition in 1992. He decided to tell the public.
Ashe continued to work even though he was weak from the disease. During his last 10 months of life, he continued to help children. He also demonstrated to support Haitian refugees, continued to fight racial injustice, and battled AIDS. He said, "Living with AIDS is not the greatest burden I've had in my life. Being black is." He gave his last speech the week he died. He said, "AIDS killed my body, but racism is harder to bear. It kills the soul." Arthur Ashe died in 1993. He was 49 years old. He had told a friend, "You come to realize that life is short and you have to step up. Don't feel sorry for me. Much is expected of those who are strong."
This program was written by Vivian Chakarian. It was produced by Lawan Davis. Our studio engineer was Kelvin Fowler. I'm Steve Ember.
And I'm Barbara Klein. Join us again next week for People in America in VOA Special English.